Welcome, rockers. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. So with the interesting stories that were discussed in our last show with hard rock, today I want to expand this type of music with heavy metal. So heavy metal developed in the late 1960s and early 1970s, mainly in the United Kingdom and to a lesser extent in the United States. With roots in blues rock, psychedelic rock, and acid rock, heavy metal bands developed a thick, massive sound characterized by distortion, extended guitar solos, emphatic beats, and loudness. The lyrics and performances are sometimes associated with aggression. So by the end of the decade, heavy metal fans became known as metalheads or headbangers. Heavy metal is a major subspecies of hard rock. The breed with less syncopation, less blues, more showmanship, and more brute force. The typical band lineup includes a drummer, a bassist, a rhythm guitarist, a lead guitarist, and a singer who may or may not be an instrumentalist. So, guitar solos in heavy metal are an essential element of the heavy metal code that kind of underscores the significance of the guitar to that genre. Most heavy metal songs feature at least one guitar solo, which is a primary means through which the heavy metal performer kind of expresses himself. The essence of heavy metal drumming is creating a loud, constant beat for the band using the trifecta of speed, power, and precision. Heavy metal drumming requires an exceptional amount of endurance, and drummers have to develop a considerable speed and coordination to play the intricate patterns that they required. A characteristic that metal drumming technique is that the cymbal choke, and this consists of striking cymbal and then immediately silencing it by grabbing it with the other hand, or in some cases the same hand, producing a burst of sound. Heavy metal bands concentrated lyrically on more dark and depressing subject matter to an extent unprecedented in any form of pop music. They take as an example Sabbath's second album, Paranoid, which included songs dealing with personal trauma. So, down the back, long hair is the most crucial distinguishing feature of metal fashion. Originally adopted from the hippie subculture, by the 1980s and 1990s, heavy metal hair symbolized the hate, angst, and disenchantment of a generation that seemingly never felt at home. According to journalist Nader Rahman, long hair gave members of the metal community the power they needed to rebel against nothing in general. The classic uniform of heavy metal fans consists of light-colored, ripped frayed, or torn blue jeans, black t-shirts, boots, and black leather denim jackets. The popular media and academia have long charged heavy metal with sexism and misogyny. In the 1980s, American conservative groups such as Parent Music Resource Center and the Parent Teacher Association kind of cooped feminist views on anti-woman violence to form attack on metal's rhetoric and more imagery that they gave out. The dominance of men in these bands and the prejudice faced by women musicians and women fans kind of being represented in the media as groupies, more interested in the musician rather than the actual music. And with that, I want to introduce our first heavy metal group known as Metallica. So Metallica was formed in 1981 in Los Angeles by vocalist and guitarist James Hetfield, and drummer Lars Ulrich, and it has been based in San Francisco for most of their career. The band's fast tempos, instrumentals, and aggressive musicianship kind of made them one of the founding big four bands of thrash metal. Metallica was influenced early by heavy metal and hard rock bands such as Kiss, Led Zeppelin, Queen, AC/DC, Rush, Aerosmith, Judas Priest, and the Scorpions. The band name came from Ulrich's friend, whose name was Ron Quintana, and he was brainstorming names for a fanzine and was considering either Metal Mania or Metallica. After hearing the two names, Ulrich wanted Metallica for his band, so he suggested that Quintana use the name Metalmania instead. So because conflicts with its record label and distributors' refusal to release an album, their debut album was actually had to be renamed to Kill 'Em All. It was released on Megaforce Records in the US and on Music for Nations in Europe and peaked at number 155 on the Billboard 200 in 1986. So although the album was not initially a financial success, it earned Metallica a growing fan base in the underground metal scene. To support the release, Metallica embarked on the Kill 'Em All for One tour in Raven. Metallica's third studio album, which was called Master of the Puppets, was recorded at Sweet Silence Studios and released in March of 1986. The album reached number 29 on the Billboard 200 and spent 72 weeks on the chart. It was the band's first album to be certified gold on November 4th of 1986 and was certified 6 times platinum in 2003. Steve Huey of AllMusic actually considered the album the band's greatest achievement. In 1996, their album Load debuted at number 1 on the Billboard 200, and it was the band's second number 1 album. The cover art was a bit controversial. It was created by Andres Serrano, which created tons of controversy, as just mentioned. And I'll say the substances used for the cover art was deemed inappropriate for immature audiences. The release of this album marked a change in the band's musical direction and a new image. The band member's hair was cut. So, during early production of the album, the band had recorded enough material to fill a double album. It was decided that half of the songs were to be released. The band would continue to work on the remaining songs and release them the following year, and this resulted in the follow-up album titled Reload. And this cover art was again created by Serrano. This time, he used a mixture of his own blood and urine for the album. So, Stephen Thomas Erwine and Greg Prado of AllMusic said that Metallica expanded the limits of thrash using speed and volume not for their own sake, but to enhance their intricately structured compositions. And they also called the band easily the best, most influential heavy metal band of the 80s, responsible for bringing the music back to earth. And one last fun fact about Metallica, the Guitar Hero video game series included several of Metallica's songs. The song One was used in Guitar Hero 3. The album Death Magnetic was later released as a purchasable, downloadable content for the game. Trapped Under Ice was featured in the sequel, Guitar Hero World Tour. In 2009, Metallica collaborated with the game's developers to make Guitar Hero Metallica, and this included a number of Metallica songs. Harmonix video game series Rock Band included Enter Sandman and Battery, Ride the Lightning, Blackened, and Justice for All. And these were all released as downloadable tracks. And with that, I will leave you for a quick break. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Citizens of California may ask the question, how can I vote? Well, Dominican University of California is dedicated to providing the answer to you, and here are a few voting methods you can use. Requesting a vote-by-mail ballot can allow you to vote from your living room couch, and all you have to do is return your vote ballot through the mail or return in person to your county elections office or on any polling place in your county. And you're done. Still confused? With any further questions you may have, you can text VOTE to go vote or call 800-345-VOTE. Stay safe out there and do not forget to go out and vote. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department of Dominican University of California. Welcome back, rockers. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. Coming up, I want to introduce you to the Black Sabbath. Black Sabbath is an English rock band formed in Birmingham in 1968 by guitarist Tony Iommi, drummer Bill Ward, bassist Geezer Butler, and vocalist Ozzy Osbourne. They are often cited as the pioneers of heavy metal music. The band helped define the genre with releases such as Black Sabbath, Paranoid, and Master of Reality. And after previous iterations of the group called the Polka Talk Blues Band and Earth, the band actually settled on the name Black Sabbath in 1969. And they also distinguished themselves through more occult themes with horror-inspired lyrics and more tuned-down guitars. The band has also been cited as a key influence on genres included stoner rock, grunge, doom metal, and sludge metal. Early on, Black Sabbath was influenced by bands like Cream, The Beatles, Fleetwood Mac, Jimi Hendrix, and Led Zeppelin. When asked to describe the band in a later interview, Ozzy Osbourne actually said that Black Sabbath never used to write a structured song. There'd be a long intro that would go into a jazzy piece, then go all folky, and it work. Tony Iommi and I said this a zillion times, should be up there with the greats. He can pick up a guitar, play a riff, and you say, he's gotta be out now, he can't top that. Then you come back, and I bet you $1 billion he'd come up with a riff that I'd knock your effing socks off. So here's a fun story. A cinema across the street from the band's rehearsal room was showing the 1963 horror film Black Sabbath, which starred Boris Karloff and directed by Mario Bava. While watching people line up to see the film, Butler noted that it was kind of strange that people spend so much money to see scary movies. Following that, Osbourne and Butler wrote the lyrics for a song called Black Sabbath, which was inspired by the work of horror and adventure story writer Dennis Wheatley. Along with the vision that Butler had a black silhouetted figure standing at the foot of his bed. Making use of the musical tritone, also known as the Devil's Interval, the song's ominous sound and dark lyrics pushed the band into a darker direction, in a stark contrast to the popular music of the late 1960s, which was dominated by more flower power, folk music, and the hippie culture, just like we discussed. Judas Priest frontman Rob Halford was called the track probably the most evil song ever written. It was inspired by the new sound. The band changed their name to Black Sabbath in 1969 and made a decision to focus on writing similar material in an attempt to create the musical equivalent of horror films. So, Black Sabbath was released on Friday the 13th in 1970 and reached number 8 in the UK albums chart following its US and Canadian release in May of 1970 by Warner Brothers Records. The album reached number 23 on the Billboard 200, where it remained for over a year. The album was given negative reviews by many critics. Actually, Lester Bangs dismissed it in a Rolling Stone interview as discordant jams with bass and guitar reeling like volecticized speed freaks all over each other's musical perimeters, yet never quite finding sync. It sold in substantial numbers despite all the bad reviews, giving the band their first mainstream exposure. Their new album was originally set to be named War Pigs after the song War Pigs, which was a critical of the Vietnam War. However, Warner changed the title of the album to Paranoid. The album's lead-off single, Paranoid, was written in the studio at the last minute. Ward explained that we didn't have enough songs for the album, and Tony just played the Paranoid guitar lick, and that was it. It took 20-25 minutes from top to bottom. So the single was released in September of 1970 and reached number 4 on the UK singles chart, remaining Black Sabbath's only top 10 hit. The album followed in the UK in October of 1970, where it pushed by the success of the Paranoid single and made number 1 in the charts. And in 1971, In July, the band released Master of Reality, just 6 months after the US release of Paranoid. The album reached the top 10 in the US and the United Kingdom and was certified gold in less than 2 months, eventually receiving platinum certification in the 1980s and double platinum in the early 21st century. It contained Sabbath's first acoustic songs, alongside fan favorites such as Children of the Grave and Sweet Leaf. Critical responses of the era was kind of generally unfavorable, with Lester Bangs again delivering an ambivalent review of Master of Reality in the Rolling Stone, kind of describing the closing as Children of the Grave as naive, simplistic, and repetitive. So during the recording of Technical Ecstasy, Osborne admitted that he actually began losing interest in Black Sabbath and began to consider possibly working with other musicians. The recording of Technical Ecstasy was difficult because by the time that the album was completed, Osborne was admitted to Stafford County Asylum in Britain. By late 1977, while in rehearsal for their next album, just days before the band was set to enter the studio actually, Osborne abruptly quit the band and pursued a solo career. So, in the long run, Black Sabbath has influenced many acts including Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, Slayer, Metallica, and Nirvana. Tony Iommi has been credited as the pioneer of the lighter gauge guitar strings. This is where the tips of his fingers were severed in a steel factory, and while using thimbles, he found that standard guitar strings were too difficult to bend and play. He found that there was only one size of strings available, so after years with Black Sabbath, he had string customs made. And talking about huge influencers, one band that I just mentioned who was influenced heavily by Sabbath is Judas Priest. Judas Priest is an English heavy metal band formed in West Bromwich in 1969. They have sold over 50 million copies of their albums and are frequently ranked as one of the greatest metal bands of all time. The current lineup consists of Halford, guitarist Glenn Tipton, and Richie Faulkner, bassist Ian Hill, and drummer Scott Travis. Halford's operatic vocal style and the twin guitar sound of Downing and Tipton have been a major influence on heavy metal bands. Judas Priest's image of leather spikes and the other taboo articles of clothing were widely influential during the glam metal era of the 1980s. So Halford listened to and was influenced heavily by artists like Little Richard, Elvis Presley, Janis Joplin, and Robert Plant as a vocalist. He learned to push the limits of his vocal abilities by their vocal demonstrations on record. He developed a powerful operatic vocal style with an impressive range from lower throaty growls to ear-piercing high screams with a strong vibrato. He was also a fan of Freddie Mercury and referred to him as his ultimate hero. Stephen Hill actually came up with the name Judas Priest from Bob Dylan's song, The Ballad of Frankie Lee and Judas Priest, on his album John Wesley Harding. So, the tour for Rock-A-Roller was Judas Priest's first international tour, with dates in Germany, the Netherlands, Norway, and Denmark, including one show at the Hotel Clubin in Norway. And this actually scored them somewhat a negative review in the local press, surprisingly. But following the release of Killing Machines in 1978 was a live release from the supporting tour Unleashed in the East in 1979, and it was the first of many Judas Priest albums to go platinum. There was some criticism of the band's use of studio enhancements and overdubbing in what was marketed as a live album. By this point, the playing style of the band had grown progressively heavier, with live versions of songs such as Exciter, Tyrant, and Diamonds and Rust sounding much heavier and faster than their studio counterparts. The 1982 album, Screaming for Vengeance, featured the song You've Got Another Thing Coming, which became a major radio hit in the US, Songs such as Electric Eye and Riding on the Wind also appeared on this album and proved to be popular live. Take These Chains by Bob Halligan Jr. actually was released as a single and received heavy airplay, and this album went double platinum. Turbo was released in April of 1986. The band adopted a more colorful stage look and gave their music a more mainstream feel by adding guitar synthesizers. The album also went platinum and had a successful arena tour in support, with 100 concerts in North America, Europe, and Japan in 1986. By 1990, Judas Priest was the subject of civil action in the US, which alleged that the band was responsible for an incident in Sparks, Nevada in 1985. At this incident, 20-year-old James Vance and 18-year-old Raymond Belknap shot themselves in the head. On the evening of December 1985, Vance and Belknap actually went to a playground at a nearby church with a 12-gauge shotgun with the purpose of committing suicide. The pair had consumed considerable amounts of alcohol and marijuana earlier that evening, and a suit alleged that the pair had been listening to Judas Priest's 1978 album Stained Glass that night, and that the song Better By You, Better Than Me had influenced their decision to end their lives. Belknap was the first to place a shotgun under his chin, and he died instantly after pulling the trigger. Sometime later, Vance also shot himself, but succeeded only in disfiguring himself by blowing away the lower half of his face. Vance survived, but ultimately died 3 years later due to complications from the self-inflicted injuries that he suffered that night. Lawyers representing the Belknap and Vance families alleged that a subliminal message urging them to do it had been embedded in the song Better By You, Better Than Me. Prosecutors alleged that their subliminal command was the trigger which kind of led directly to the pair deciding to shoot themselves. Vance's parents claimed that their son had been troubled for a long time prior to the suicide pact, but had recently changed for the better, and he had re-embraced his family's Christian faith and was reading the Bible before the garbage music of Judas Priest had led them astray. And this incident ultimately hurt the band's image in the following years. After the Painkiller tour in 1991, Halford left Judas Priest in September, and these were indications of the internal tensions within the band. Halford went on to form a street-style thrash metal group named Fight. He informed his band to explore new musical territory. However, Judas Priest was influenced a great deal of metal music since the late 1970s. They were ranked by MTV as the second greatest metal band of all time in 2010. And after this break, we will discuss two iconic heavy metal bands. This is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio. Carbon emissions represent man's greatest controllable contribution to global warming. If you like to breathe crisp, healthful air, think about this. For every mile driven, 1 pound of carbon particulate matter is released into our atmosphere. Before you jump into your car, next time, ask yourself if you can make the trip on your bike instead. And keep it clean.
Welcome back, rockers. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. After discussing Judas Priest's interesting careers, I want to talk about Iron Maiden. So, Iron Maiden is an English heavy metal band formed in Leyton, East London in 1975 by bassist and primary songwriter Steve Harris. The band's discography has grown to 40 albums, including 16 studio albums, 13 live albums, 4 EPs, and 7 compilations. Steve Harris, Iron Maiden's bassist and primary songwriter, as I just mentioned, has stated that his influences included Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, Uriah Heep, Pink Floyd, Genesis, Thin Lizzy, Queen, and Wishbone Ash. In 2010, Harris stated, "I think if anyone wants to understand Maiden's early thing, in particular the harmony and guitars, all they have to do is listen to Wishbone Ash's Argus album. Thin Lizzy too, but not as much. And then we went to have a bit of a prog thing thrown in as well, because I was really into bands like Genesis and Jethro Tull, so you combine all that with heavy riffs and the speed, and you've got it." Iron Maiden was formed on Christmas Day in 1975 by bassist Steve Harris shortly after he left his previous group Smiler. Harris attributed the band's name to a film adaptation of The Man in the Iron Mask from the novel by Alexandre Dumas, the title which reminded him of the Iron Maiden torture device. So, after months of rehearsal, Iron Maiden made their debut at St. Nick's Hall in Poplar on the 1st of May of 1976. In 1982, Iron Maiden released their third studio album, Number of the Beast, which gave the band their first UK Albums Chart number one record, and additionally became a top 10 hit in many other countries. The Beast on the Road's US leg kind of proved controversial when an American conservative political lobbying group claimed that Iron Maiden were satanic because of the new album's title track, to the point where a group of Christian activists destroyed Iron Maiden records as a protest against the band. In the recent years, Dickinson stated that the band treated this as silliness and that the demonstrations, in fact, gave them loads of publicity instead. Iron Maiden regrouped to work on a new studio record. During the pre-production stages, Adrian Smith left the band due to differences with Steve Harris regarding the direction the band should be taking, disagreeing with the stripped-down style that they were leaning towards. Janet Gers, having worked on Dickinson's solo project, was chosen to replace Smith and became the band's first new member in 7 years. The album, No Prayer for the Dying, was released in 1990 and contained songs like Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter and the band's first UK single chart number one, originally recorded by Dickinson's solo outfit for the soundtrack to A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child. The song was banned by the BBC and only a 90-second live clip on the Top of the Pops was actually shown. So Iron Maiden's mascot, Eddie, was a kind of perennial figure in the band's science fiction and horror-influenced album cover art, as well as in live shows. Originally, it was a papier-mâché mask incorporated in their backdrop, which would squirt flake blood during their live shows. The name would be transferred to the character featured in the band's debut album cover, created by Derek Riggs. Eddie was painted exclusively by Riggs until 1992, at which point the band began using artwork from numerous other artists as well, including Melvin Grant. So the band's name has been mentioned prominently in several songs, such as singles Teenage Dirtbag by Wheatus, Back to the 80s by Danish dance pop band Aqua, and Fat Lip by Sum 41. Iron Maiden have also been referenced in Weezer's Heart Songs, Blues Travels' Psycho Joe, and NoFX's Eddie, Bruce, and Paul. In 1982, the band released one of their most popular, controversial, and acclaimed albums, titled The Number of the Beast. The artwork and title track led to Christian groups in the US branding the band as Satanist and encouraging people to destroy copies of the release. The band's manager, his name was Rod Smallwood, later commented that Christians initially burnt records but later decided to destroy them with hammers through fear of breathing in the melting vinyl fumes. The protests were not restricted to the US, with Christian organizations preventing Iron Maiden from performing in Chile in 1992. But contrary to the accusations, the band have always tried to deny the notion that they were Satanist, with lead vocalist Bruce Dickinson doing so on stage in a Live After Death concert video. Steve Harris has since commented that, "It was mad. they got completely the wrong end of the stick, and they obviously hadn't read the lyrics. They just wanted to believe that all that rubbish about us being Satanists. So wow, it seems like almost every heavy metal band that we've discussed is accused of being a Satanist. But after this quick break, we will discuss more crazy stories by these bands. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock right here on Penguin Radio.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Citizens of California may ask the question, how can I vote? Well, Dominican University of California is dedicated to providing the answer to you, and here are a few voting methods you can use. Requesting a vote by mail ballot can allow you to vote from your living room couch, and all you have to do is return your vote ballot through the mail or return in person to your county elections office or on any polling place in your county, and you're done. Still confused? With any further questions you may have, you can text VOTE to go vote or call 800-345-VOTE. Stay safe out there and do not forget to go out and vote. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department of Dominican University of California. Welcome back, rockers. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. So we left off by talking about bands accused of being Satanists. I would like to finish off this topic with Motley Crue. So Motley Crue is an American heavy metal band formed in Los Angeles in 1981. The group was founded by bassist Nikki Sixx, drummer Tommy Lee, lead guitarist Mick Mars, and lead singer Vince Neil. Motley Crue has sold over 100 million albums worldwide, and they have also achieved 7 platinum or multi-platinum certifications, 9 top 10 albums on the Billboard 200 chart. The members of Motley Crue have been often noted for their hedonistic lifestyles and more androgynous personae that they maintained on and off stage. So the newly formed band did not yet have a name. Sixx has said that he told his bandmates that he was thinking about calling the band Christmas. The other members were not very receptive to this idea, so while trying to find a suitable name, Mars remembered an incident that occurred when he was playing with a band called White Horse, when one of the other band members called the group a motley-looking crew. He had remembered the phrase and later copied it down as Motley Crue, and after modifying the spelling slightly, Motley Crue was eventually selected as the band's name, with a stylistic decision suggested by Neil to add the two sets of metal umlauts, supposedly inspired by the German beer Löwenbräu, which the members were drinking at the time. So the band became rapidly successful in the US after playing at the US Festival in May of 1983, and also with the aid of the new medium of MTV. Their second album, which was named Shout at the Devil, was released in 1983. This album kind of represented the band's mainstream breakthrough and would eventually be certified as a 4x platinum. The album also generated controversy for its title track and the album imagery, both of which invoked Satanism. The band members also had their share of scrapes with the law. On December 8th of 1984, Neil was driving home from a liquor run in his Don Tomaso Pandera, which ended in a head-on collision. His passenger, Hanoi Rocks drummer Nicholas Razzle Dingley, was killed. Neil was charged with a DUI and vehicular manslaughter and was sentenced to 30 days in jail, though he only served 18 days, and subsequently sued for $2,500,000. The short jail term was negotiated by his lawyers, kind of enabling Neil to tour and play the civil suit. The band's third album, which was titled Theater of Pain, was actually dedicated in Dingley's honor, and it started a new glam metal phase in the band's style. Theater Pain was commercially successful, reaching number 6 on the Billboard album charts, and eventually being certified as a quadruple platinum. However, the recording of the album was fraught with tension in the wake of Neil's accident and Six's growing addiction, and the members of the band have said that they consider it a creative disappointment. On December 23rd of 1987, Six suffered a heroin overdose. He was declared legally dead on the way to the hospital, but the paramedic, who was a Motley Crue fan, revived Six with 2 shots of adrenaline. His 2 minutes in death were the inspiration for the song Kickstart My Heart, which peaked at number 16 on the mainstream US chart and which was featured on the 1989 US number 1, their first album, Dr. Feelgood. From 1986 to 1987, Six kept a daily diary of his heroin addiction and eventually entered rehab in January of 1988. So the band members each stated in interviews that, due in no small part to their collective push for sobriety, Dr. Feelgood was their most solid album musically to that point. The title track and Kickstart My Heart were both nominated for Grammys in the Best Hard Rock category in 1990 and in 1991, respectively, but lost both years to songs by Living Colour. The band did find some success at the American Music Awards, as Dr. Feelgood was nominated twice for Favorite Hard Rock / Metal Award, losing once to Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction, but winning the following year, beating out Aerosmith's Pump and Poison's Flesh and Blood. And in 2006, the band received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. So, the last band that I want to discuss today is Slayer. So Slayer was an American thrash metal band from Huntington Park, California. The band was formed in 1981 by guitarist Kerry King and Jeff Hanneman, drummer Dave Lombardo, and bassist and vocalist Tom Araya. Slayer's fast and aggressive musical style made them one of the big 4 bands of thrash metal alongside Metallica. The band's lyrics and album art, which cover topics such as murder, serial killers, torture, genocide, politics, human experimentation, Satanism, hate crimes, terrorism, religion, anti-religion, Nazism, racism, war, and prison, have generated album bans, delays, and lawsuits and criticism from religious groups and factions of the general public. Their album Show No Mercy had sold over 40,000 copies, which led to the band's returning to the studio to record their 2nd full-length album. Metal Blade financed a recording budget, which kind of allowed the band to hire producer Ron Fair. So their 2nd album was released in 1985. It was a 2nd full-length album titled Hell Awaits, and it expanded on the darkness of haunting the chapel, with hell and Satan as common song subjects. The album was the band's most progressive offering, featuring longer and more complex song structures. The intro of the title track is a backwards recording of a demonic-sounding voice repeating Join Us, ending with Welcome Back, before the track begins. The album was a hit, with fans choosing Slayer for their best band, best live band, Hell Awaits as 1985's best album, and Dave Lombardo as the best drummer in the British magazine Metal Forces in 1985 Reader's Poll. In 1994, Slayer released Divine Intervention, the band's first album with Botstaff on the drums. The album featured songs about Reinhard Heydrich, an architect from the Holocaust, and Jeffrey Dahmer, an American serial killer and sex offender. Other themes included murder, the evils of the church, and the length to which governments went to yield power. Ariel's interest in serial killers kind of inspired much of the content and lyrics of this album. Another album, Diabolus in Musica, which is Latin for the devil's music, was released in 1998 and debuted at number 31 on the Billboard 200, selling over 46,000 copies in its first week. The album received a mix of critical reception and was criticized for adopting characteristics of new metal music, such as tuned-down guitars, murky chord structures, and churning beats. Blabbermouth.net reviewer described the album as a feeble attempt at incorporating updated elements in the group's sound, the presence of which elevated the band's efforts somewhat and offered hope that Slayer could refrain from endlessly rehashing their previous material for their future output. Music author Joel McGyver considers Slayer very influential in the extreme metal scene, especially in the development of the death metal and black metal subgenres. According to John Considine of Terrorizer, without Slayer's influence, extreme metal as we know it wouldn't exist. Cam Lee of Massacre and former member of Death stated, "There wouldn't be death metal or black metal or even extreme metal, the likes of what it is today, if not for Slayer." However, a lawsuit was brought against the band in 1996 by the parents of Elise Poller, who accused the band of encouraging their daughter's murderers through the lyrics. Poller was drugged, strangled, stabbed, and trampled on, and sexually assaulted as a sacrifice to the devil by three fans of the band. The case was unsealed by the court on May 19th of 2000, stating that Slayer and related business markets kind of distribute harmful products to teens, encouraging violent acts through their lyrics. And none of the vicious crimes committed against Elise Mary Poller would have occurred without the intentional marketing strategy of death metal band Slayer. The lawsuit, however, was dismissed in 2001 for multiple reasons, including principles of free speech, lack of a duty, and lack of foreseeability. Slayer has also been accused of holding Nazi sympathies due to the band's eagle logo bearing the resemblance to the eagle atop swastika in the lyrics of Angel of Death. Angel of Death was inspired by the acts of Joseph Mengele, the doctor who conducted human experiments on prisoners during World War II at the Auschwitz concentration camp, and was dubbed the Angel of Death by inmates. So, very dark ending. This is where I'll wrap it up for today, rockers. Thank you so much for listening to The Journey Through Rock, and I hope you will join me next time where we will examine New Wave. My name is DJ Blue, and this is Penguin Radio.